Welcome to the Innovators and Investors Podcast. I'm Christian Marquez, founder and CEO of Finstrat Management. At Finstrat, we provide CFO-led accounting, finance, and reporting services to assist clients monetize their business. Stick around to the end of the podcast, and I'll share how you can be our next guest. Now, on to the show. Hello, and welcome to another episode of the Innovators and Investors Podcast. I'm your host, Christian Marquez, founder and CEO of Finstrat Management. Really excited because with us today, we have David Brehm. David has a whole host of responsibilities, starting with Managing Director of the University of Michigan's endowment, the Zell Lurie Commercialization Fund. David's also an MBA Investment Associate at Electro Ventures, a Research Associate at the London Venture Capital Network, and a senior venture scout at Level Up Ventures. David, welcome to the podcast.
Pleasure to be here, Christian. Thanks for having me.
Our pleasure. So, oh my gosh, I'm super impressed of what you got your time focused on here. But you know what? I'm actually going to defer to you. Where do you think makes the most sense to start? I really would love to learn about all these organizations.
Yeah, I mean, listen, I got the Michigan Maize & Blue on my chest here, so happy to talk about ZLCF. It's what gets me out and about a lot, connecting founders to each other, and then sort of dive in from there.
Great. Let's hear about it.
Cool. So we are a early stage sector agnostic fund. We invest anywhere from pre-seed through Series A. With that said, we will typically over-index on the pre-seed to seed. Okay. So we are generally more qualitative analysis over quantitative analysis, very much founder first, people first in our investments. And our thesis itself is specific to Michigan. Historically, we're founded in the early 2000s. So our investments would be either in students or alums of University of Michigan. That still tends to somewhat be the case, but over time we've interpreted that more liberally to get a greater diversity within our deal flow. So now that evolution has resulted in whether you're from Michigan, you started a company in the state of Michigan, traveled through Michigan, coughed in Michigan, right? We want to hear from you and we want to talk to you.
Great. Electro Ventures.
Yeah, so Electro Ventures is, they're an interesting one. They're a really more of an investment holding company. They're based in state of Australia, quite abroad, and they are e-mobility specific. So mobility, transportation tech, generally sort of my focus area. I'm helping them craft a US investment thesis to break into our market here domestically. Josh Portlock is an inventor and founder of over a dozen companies in that portfolio, just a brilliant mind. So get the pleasure of helping him out with investment opportunities here.
Fantastic. London Venture Capital Network.
So they're an ecosystem, right? Obviously, as the name suggests, in London. What I realized, though, is just by connecting to founders and just brilliant folks within my own sector of interest, right? Mobility, transportation, realized that over half of the founders I'm talking to are Europe-based. Yeah. So it's sort of, it kind of bifold, right? One hand, it's great. I get to write thought pieces, leadership articles on what's happening in the mobility space. But at the same time, it's also a bridge. I think there's a lot, especially maybe from Silicon Valley, there's not a lot of conversations that are happening abroad. So to be able to be the US correspondent and bring some of those conversations into the US, likewise, export some of those conversations to London and elsewhere is what we're doing over there.
Okay. And last but not least, Level Up Ventures.
Level Up Ventures is a really interesting fund, LA based. They like to invest typically in the consumer area, but it's another way I can just help support founders. Given that ZLCF obviously operates within the academic calendar, I still want to help support these guys as much as possible. So Level Up is really unique because they are their own fund. But if you check them out and you check out their application, they have a host of funds that are connected to them. So even if it's not Level Up that's going to invest in them, there's some pretty powerful names there like Graycroft, And so it's a great way to help support founders, whether they're in hard tech, whether they're B2B SaaS, or really anywhere in between. There should be a lane to help them out. And that's what I aim to do there.
Fantastic. All right. So I hear a reoccurring theme between focus on founders and mobility. Let's start with mobility. What's the investment thesis? And what are some of the types of solutions you see companies operating in this segment are solving for?
It's a great question. The investment thesis is a personal one, right? And that's based on some background. So maybe it makes sense if I start off there.
Please.
So prior going to Ross, which is where I'm at now, was a Marine Corps intelligence threat analyst over at Marine Corps Intelligence Activity, which is sort of the IC component to the Marines. I was a cyber threat analyst and electronic warfare analyst. Oversaw a variety of projects, but my favorite one was the F-35B rollout. So this was like the Marine Corps variant of this specific fighter jet, right? And so we're looking at the operational blueprint and thinking, okay, from a threat perspective, what are the adversary's capabilities? And in looking at that, you're sort of indirectly or directly getting a pretty significant engineering background, because you have to look at this and see, all right, where are the deficiencies, where are the gaps, and then how do we license this out once we formalize this to our partners at Northrop Grumman, Lockheed Martin, General Dynamics, BAE Systems, et cetera, right? And so in leading that, it gave me this aerospace interest. And then afterwards, went into management consulting, joined the artificial intelligence and analysis practice, and just happened to have aerospace clients. I had a defense helicopter manufacturer. I had a ultra low cost carrier from the Mexican market. And then I think just by virtue of being a consultant, you're inherently traveling, right? You're going from place to place. And very different from my Marine Corps days, where you're in a skiff, you have to lock your phone away, no contact outside world. And it got me really interested in hospitality, or a joke, sometimes a lack of hospitality in the US market. And I realized, hey, when I go to business school, VC really wasn't on my mind. But going into mobility, travel tech was. Mm. So I ended up founding the Aviation Club at Ross, which is still active today. And that was for two reasons. One is to get ad geeks like myself connected and talking about the space. There's also a number of us that fly, that have pilot licenses, et cetera. So that's kind of fun as a recreational thing. But its real purpose is a recruitment mechanism. And to get people talking about the functional matter of what travel is and what we're doing there. So I hosted a aviation consulting forum. And if you think about MBBs, obviously we're a top 10 business program. But what if we got the MBBs of aerospace in? And that's exactly what we did. So we brought in Airline Strategy Group, we brought in Seabury Consulting, and we brought in another group that's Ann Arbor based, Aerodynamics. And in bringing all of them in, we just started talking about the trends, the future, and these are the people who are actually behind these deals, behind genuine advisory for these companies, for these startups. And I think if you're attending events like that, naturally you're also interested in investment, right? And so this last semester, we hosted a mobility tech conference, bringing in travel tech voices like Elad Berenstein, who's really big out of Seattle, among other voices. And then we just hosted a mobility and climate tech panel, and we featured Congruent Ventures, Ecosystem Integrity Fund, Up Partners, and Trucks VC. So just trying to bring all these voices to Ross. But simultaneously, when I went to Ross and I started off, I was trying to figure out, okay, what am I going to recruit for? But I knew I wanted to join this venture fund called ZLCF. Not really as a leader, but more so, you know, having been in the startup community myself, I thought, hey, how do I pitch investors in the future, right? I think all of us, or majority of us, have this entrepreneurial instinct. So it was mainly as a mechanism to gain knowledge, not leadership. But what I saw really quickly was just like the founder engagement and getting to have real palpable conversations with so many people in the community. I think it's this addiction, right? And I think once you get that taste of venture, you can't leave it. And I realized, hey, there might be some career opportunities here. So let's delve into it. Fortunate to be elected by my peers to serve as head of ZLCF. And in that, we've been increasing our deal flow. We've been making some really interesting investments in areas we haven't historically been doing, again, because of that diversity. And we've been a gateway for Midwest deal flow. Our objective now is to connect to the West Coast and East Coast and continue the magic that we're doing. But your question was around mobility, right? So this is a really long-winded answer of basically me telling you sort of like the genesis of all of that. But I think it's important first to establish that. And then to answer your question, why mobility? Now that you know the context, I think what we're seeing is in terms of the future, right? If you take eVTOLs, think air taxis, right? There's some lead manufacturers in there. There's Joby, there's Archer that are US-based, there's Vertical, which is UK-based. I think those are your top three. And the way I see it is it's very synonymous to take COVID vaccines, right? You have your Moderna, Pfizer, J&J, maybe a little bit of Novavax, but all these other vaccine vendors, what happened? They kind of fizzled out, right? And I think you're going to see the similar thing with eVTOLs. But think about big market cities. Think about the Bay Area in SF. Think about New York. Think about Newark, JFK, LaGuardia. So there's obvious use cases here. And when you look at the institutional VC backing and these legacy players like United, American, Delta that are actively investing in this, it tells you that this is very much going to happen in the next 15 years. Now, as an investor, I wouldn't touch it because I think there's going to be a lot of saturation. There's going to be a lot of M&A activity. But where I would go, where no one is really talking about, is what are the infrastructure adjacent things to aviation and to eVTOLs, right?
Literally about to ask you that next.
And so, and that's a whole ecosystem. And that's what gets me interested. And so when you talk about hardware, there's a company called Electro Aero, right? That is looking at the electrical charging infrastructure. And there's other companies doing this too. So that's a name to watch. But there's other things too. Think about like just smart city infrastructure. Think about B2B SaaS applications. Another startup called Altaport. The founder, Corey Cousins, is basically creating this system where, you know, he already has this in place and is scaling it to where when you go on the Uber app or Lyft or whatever, you might see, okay, this eVTOL is like 15 minutes away, right? Yeah, I'll book it. It might be more expensive probably, but it's still going to enable the consumer to go about doing that. Those are things I would watch in both the hard tech and SaaS environment, anything that's adjacent to aviation.
Makes good sense. We're aligned. You know, it's intuitive, but for, you know, our listeners who are maybe not as dialed into aviation, obviously safety is top of mind. FAA, manages U.S. airspaces. If you've ever talked to a pilot, a whole host of regulations depending on what you're flying, where you're flying, when you're flying. At the top is safety. And so it totally makes sense that, yeah, there's a tremendous amount of convenience, but we got to make sure that people get from one place to the other. And, you know, in the meanwhile, you don't have an aircraft that accidentally lands someplace it's not supposed to.
Absolutely. No, and just to index on that a little bit, that's especially top of mind. I don't know if you know Ben Marcus, who is managing partner over at Up Partners in Santa Monica. But him and I had a discussion about this a few months ago, right? Is looking into what are some possible safety investment plays that we can do in this ecosystem, especially what we're hearing about now. Listen, DCA is my home airport, right? So when we heard about the CRJ flight that happened, that's really personal to me. And you always think, oh my God, what if I was on that flight, right? And you think about the way it happened and how avoidable it was. And then take Newark, which isn't too far away from here. you have one runway that is currently being worked on. You have 40% layovers. You have the CEO of United right now who came out and saying, you know, they basically walked off the job. And then you have an ATC controller who anonymously said, do not travel here. It's not safe. And so, I mean, that's an astronomical statement to say, if you think about that, right? And the implications of that statement. So as an investor, absolutely, I'm looking at training. And I think an area that people aren't quite talking about this just yet, when you look at pilot training right now, what are they training in? They're training in these Cessna 172s at these local airports, right? Like our aviation club likes to use too for events. Great. But you're not dealing with this high traffic, high velocity areas. And I think that creates an issue, because when you have these young pilots that are training on these small aircraft, right? Sure, everything's fine. But now their next step is a pretty big one. You're going from there to being a first officer of a CRJ. You're going into a high traffic airport where if you're familiar with the Swiss cheese effect, right? It's basically saying if you go through all these holes, you will hit a point of failure. But if you hit through one hole, you can still recover, right? It's not going to result in anything. But if you put effectively a metal rod through all these layers, there will be a failure point. That's what happened in this case. And so looking at training, I think, is definitely an area of focus.
So whole host of opportunity. And so maybe if we do, we can take a step back. You know, I think you may have the distinction, David, of being the first guest on the podcast who's been the managing director of an endowment. You know, can we unpack that for the benefit of the audience? You know,
please.
What's the relationship, the university? How does the funding work? You know, what's your mandate? Is there a mandate? You know, and from there, I think it would be a great stepping off point to talk about, you know, how you're then making decisions on some of these great opportunities that we see in front of us.
Totally. So two gentlemen, early 2000s, right, came together and put in an endowment for ZLCF.
Okay.
And so that was Samuel Zell, Robert Lurie. Our mandate effectively is a 50K check size, no cap, meaning we could make 14 investments if we wanted to. We don't. We're actually quite risk adverse, and I'll chat about that later. But it's possible as of now, right? And our mandate is basically to invest in the greater Michigan ecosystem. Historically, that would mean students and alums coming out of the University of Michigan. In present, that means anything that's connected to the state of Michigan or greater Michigan for the purpose of a diversity of deal flow. And that typically leads to better deals.
And apologies, because you mentioned that part earlier. Even if I think Michigan, I may be able to present to you guys. Yeah, so how does the funding work? Is it the endowment get recharged every year? Is it on a case-by-case basis?
Historically, our fund has either made no investments in a year. One investment is typically our average. And I would say in the most liberal of circumstances, we'll do two investments. So to your question, right, how does it work? We always have the 50K check size available. Now, again, if we were to make 30 investments, that would be very atypical. And I think we would have a conversation from our parent organization, which funnels these checks, which is the Zell Lurie Institute, about, hey, maybe we're going to scale this back. Maybe there is a formal cap. But as of now, it's a 50K check size. Yeah.
So endowments in place. Due diligence.
Yeah.
I understand the themes. I also understand, though, that you're pre-seed, seed. And so, you know, perhaps there isn't revenue there. And yeah. So maybe bigger emphasis on the founding team and the tech. But, you know, would love to know, you know, what are some of the key things that the fund looks for making a decision?
Great question. So the way it works, right, is you have your managing director, but you also have your leadership team, and I couldn't do it without them. Yeah. Before we talk about due diligence, we have our deal flow team, and that's typically a member of 3 to 4 folks. And what we did differently this year was we made someone be sort of like, you know, the lead for international investment opportunities. of course, I'm biased, but I think University of Michigan has the greatest alumni network in the world. And the world means that we go beyond the US. So we still have a brilliant student who happens to be international, sort of like take the lead on that while also helping us with our deal flow. And she's done an exceptional job there. And then we'll have a head of community, we'll have a head of portfolio management, really anything from a social level to an engagement level, all the way up the chain to our deal flow. And so now that that's established, to actually talk about what do we look for in our due diligence, our investment criteria is basically in a really simple four gradient matrix, right? So we look at team, product, business model, and our market. Yes. So when we look at the team, when the founder comes in, is the founder engaged? Is he responsive? Is he visionary, right? And then also within the founder, what sort of team skill sets are we seeing? What experiences can the founder bring that would make the company successful? When we look at product, is the product differentiated, right? What's being addressed? Is there sort of an unmet need? And then within the business model, then are you B2B? Are you B2C? What's your pricing strategy? Who are your current customers, your target customers? Is it scalable? All of these are critical questions, even at our early stage. And then finally, market, right? So are you a growing market? Are you an attractive market? And then again, in terms of scalability, what does that look like for your market size? And based on that gradient, we then will talk about internally after the pitch, what did we think? What were our thoughts? That typically goes to a vote. And then the vote is dictated such that it's just a simple majority. If this goes to due diligence itself. And then if it passes a 51% or plus threshold, then we will have a DD team. And then after a DD team is assigned, that's typically 6 to 7 students. The students will delve deeper into all of those four areas that I outlined, right? Again, with an over index on qualitative features, just given what our investment mandate is. Then we'll come back to the fund, and then the DD team will have three options. One is a go, green light, invest, which is very rare, but of course it does happen. Second is hold, meaning maybe they're not quite there yet, but let's see, let's put it through our deal flow. A hold is also quite rare, but in order to have a hold, it means you believe in the founders. The numbers may not be quite there just yet, but who are we to dictate that? Because of course we perform financial modeling, but if we think there's some red flags there, but we still see the potential, that's going to result in a hold. And that means that in the following year, the pursuant leadership of the fund will pick it back up and see, is it a match? At which point it's either a go or no go as far as investment. And then of course the final option is do not invest. So if the DD team comes and says, no, we're not going to invest, there's no vote, right? If the due diligence team says no, fine. If it's a hold or an invest, then that does get brought before our fellows. And then that results in a 2/3 plus majority having to say yes to hold or yes to invest. And then after that decision, either we write a check or we put it back through a deal flow.
Got it. I suspect I know the answer, but do you guys ever do follow-on investment?
So typically, no. I don't think we've had a case yet. With that said, though, the way that I'm seeing the trajectory of our fund is I think we've accomplished a lot. In fact, I think it was 2007, actually, there was a company called Arbor Photonics, which is rebranded as Nlight. That company is actually publicly traded on the NASDAQ. We got a 90x return on that investment. So we invested 50K, right? And now its post-exit was at 450 million. So we do quite well. We're students. We entice sector agnostic folks to come in. And our background is also intentionally not VC. Mind you, we'll have a couple folks that may have some VC background or experience, but we try to over-index on folks that don't have that background, because I think that adds the diversity of thought leadership into the fund. So typically we average about 50 fellows plus or minus one or two every year. And of that 50, four of them are JDs. One of them is a dual degree JD MBA. We have two PhD students this year. One of them is in chemical engineering. And so that just adds a diversity of thought. And then another good friend of mine, he's a dual degree MD MBA. And I think by bringing in people of different backgrounds that have this true subject matter expertise of a particular field, I think that just adds to the value of how we make investments, especially how we perceive founders that may not have formal revenue streams, that may not have formal numbers.
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely intangibles that are involved, and having the benefit of, you know, other sharp minds who can, you know, bring perspective totally makes good sense. So, all right, so investment gets made. What's the degree that you guys will get involved to support the company on their journey?
Great question. So obviously you're looking at, right, a 10 to 15 year horizon after our investment. I think the beauty about us is we're not taking a significant equity position. Typically that hovers around 1%. But what we do provide is institutional backing. You forever have the Mason glue on your chest. You also have advisory support. So you get a swath of faculty advisors. You also get the Zellori Institute behind you that sees it through fruition. So whether that's simple marketing or actual resources, we also, depending on the needs of the company, we'll funnel in our own internal engineers from particular programs and schools, resources, infrastructure support. And then I think our biggest value add is why I'm having this conversation with you today is our alums. There's almost always going to be an alum that is in that founder's realm, their sector interest, as well as their geographic location, that can provide follow-on funding and additional support as needed. And if we invest in you, you're going to get that and then some.
I love it. Okay, so I understand the mandate. Now I'm going to come back to your time with Electro and the network. So yeah. I understand Australia and England. Are you traveling there as part of your work, or are you staying remote?
No, I have something lined up in London in a couple of weeks, so hopefully we'll make it out. But at some point, I do intend on traveling. There are a lot of exciting things happening with the London Venture Capital Network. Not traveling to Australia yet, but I think, hey, any opportunity that arises, I would love to. What's unique about LVCN is a thesis that I also share. And so London Venture Capital Network was built based on the sort of stereotype of how you get into VC, right? And I think there's kind of this general thought of, well, I have to be from, you know, maybe HBS or Stanford. Maybe I also have to have an investment banking background. You have to have like a very formulaic trajectory. And if I'm not one of these two or three things, then that's it. And I don't think that's true. And if you look at just based on your guests, right, who you've interviewed, everyone brings diverse skill set, background, pedigree. No one is in this formulaic structure. But LVCN is the same model. So it's trying to break down barriers within the European ecosystem. My value add there is doing the same thing, but bridging that over to the US ecosystem. I think a very traditional investor mentality would be looking at Europe and saying, well, they make conservative investments, so we're disinterested. And to a degree, that is very true. But what people aren't talking about is the intangibles, the founders there that are working on some really interesting things that would be very relevant to the deal flow of even the most established funds over in Silicon Valley. So I think that's more of the bridge, the ecosystem. And then it's interesting because all of these things, right, are sort of VC adjacent, but not necessarily aligned to a specific firm, which gives me the bandwidth to be able to support these things, whether I'm venture scouting. So I'll typically, you know, maybe I'll meet a founder that I like in mobility, right, who's based in Austria working on some incredible things. And if my fund, as in ZLCF, cannot directly invest, there's still ways I can help you. I can put you through Level Up and its funding partners. I can connect you to some of the most brilliant minds in VC out there in LA, SF, or elsewhere in the country, create intros. And we were talking about this before the podcast, right? But I think similar to what you're working on is also my job too, which is one, connect founders to founders, two, founders to VCs, and then three, VCs to VCs, but really in that order. VCs love talking to founders. And I think when you talk about actual thought leadership, it's founder driven, it's not VC driven. So the idea with all of these three is just to be a connector and to help build this ecosystem.
You know, that's great. I mean, you know, obviously we all have our own unique networks, but I'm pretty impressed that you're expanding your scope from the get-go, you know, and recognizing that there's innovation taking place everywhere. US is obviously really unique just given our culture. But I mean, you know, as an investor, it's part of your job. You got to uncover diamonds, whether they're rough or not. But I guess early stage, you generally are. It was brilliant. David, really enjoyed the podcast. Before we wrap up, two more questions. First one, totally realize you're earlier in your career than I am, all good, but I still enjoy asking this question of everybody. And that is, if you had an opportunity to go back, have a conversation with your younger self, it's, you pick the age, what would you share?
That's a great question. And something I was going to say for later too, it's a perfect time to do it. You know, I would rewind the clock to a year ago. I wouldn't change anything I did, any action. But it's funny, you have a lot of students, I think, that listen to the podcast, so this is probably relevant for them. And starting your MBA, we were told by then MBA twos, be intentional, right? Whatever you do, really be laser focused in that one specific area. I think that advice is somewhat of an oxymoron because you're new. You just uprooted yourself to a new area. In my case, I went from DC to a college town up in Michigan. So how are you supposed to be intentional about things that you're just barely getting accustomed to? So my advice is spread yourself out, give yourself a wider bandwidth.
Yeah.
I discovered VC because of the fund. I never had any intention of being a leader, of being this bridge, this connector, right? But it was more so the thought of, all right, hey, let's see what happens. And then in doing so, what I came to recruit for very quickly changed. And then I started going on trips. I started wanting to learn more. There's no way for people who are recruiting for VC, you can't do this behind only a screen. When there's job applications, right? And my belief is you can't just cold apply, maybe to a degree that works, but these VCs need to know who you are. So how do you get them to know who you are? You have to show up in person. You also have to prove value. How do you prove value? By helping founders. How do you help founders? You have to go to these areas, meet them, support them, and be a connector. And so what I did, I think anyone can do, anyone can replicate it. But I would say, don't believe in this myth that VC is this gatekept thing, only a select few can do it. If you're listening to this podcast, you're very capable of doing it. You're already at a head start than I am, right? I wish I knew about your podcast a year ago. But I would say, go in there, don't be shy, be your own advocate, support others. And it may seem a little surface level, but I think if you do those things, the minute you add value to one person, you add value to 10 people. It's a multiplier, just like what we see in the fund.
Yeah, you make me think of two things. Thing one, I was listening to a clip from an interview Mark Andreessen was doing. He was commenting on criticism of Bay Area investors who seem to be clicky. And his response was, you know, it's not that there's a club per se, but the fact that you can figure out how to get to us speaks volumes of who you are. And you can imagine, they make a business of making, you know, for lack of a better term, you know, well-placed bets. And so what better indicator than someone who can actually figure out how to make to someone. So how do you get there? And that was the second thing. And is I don't get credit for the analogy, but someone I heard say, talk is cheap, so talk a lot. You know, it's inexpensive to have conversations. And oh my gosh, 100% couldn't agree with you more. You never know what you're going to uncover. But you gotta put yourself out there, and it can be hard, right? You're an introvert. I'm an introvert. You know, this isn't my steady state, but you know, I wish I devoted time to networking when I was just talking to people when I was earlier in my career. I think, you know, absolutely, you know, has an impact on the trajectory.
I totally agree. I think this is a very EQ driven business, right? And everyone says the network is small, and that is true. But I also think, right, a lot of people will say, oh, just warm intros. No, do cold intros. Some of my best contacts are actually cold intros. And the minute you have a successful cold intro, another piece of advice I would say too is, you know, some students might be a little nervous. Okay, they said yes, they want to talk to me. Now what do I do? I think a big unsaid rule is that person would not have said yes to you if they did not see the value in what you would bring to that conversation. Otherwise, yeah, sure, you'd be ghosted. We all get ghosted plenty of times, right? But believe in yourself. And if that person that you admire so much wants to talk, they already see the value. So see it in yourself.
Yep, I love it. Last question. And it's a new question or a newer question. I just started asking. Shout out to the production team. If there was someone else you'd like to see on the podcast, who would it be?
Man, that's a great question. There's so many names. I would have to throw a plug in for a huge mentor of mine, someone I deeply respect in the industry, Charles Hudson, who's the founder, managing partner of Precursor Ventures. I think if you listen to his own thought leadership, the things that he talks about doing, investing, you're not going to hear anything more genuine or sincere than how he approaches investing and the founders that he invests in. I think it'd be huge for your program, huge for your audience. And he's just a genuine human being. So I would say Charles Hudson.
Charles Hudson, Precursor. He's on the list. All right. We're going to figure out how to get a hold of him. David, I really appreciate your time. Thank you so much. If there are any members of our audience who like to get a hold of you, how can they find you?
Yeah. Feel free to follow me on LinkedIn. You can also find me. My email is dlbrem@umich.edu. Pretty accessible there. Otherwise, yes, slide me a DM, shoot me an email. Always around. I'll always get back within 24 hours.
Fantastic. David, thank you so much. I appreciate your time. Again, for the benefit of our audience, David Brem, Managing Director, Zell Lurie Commercialization Fund, MBA Investment Associate at Electro Ventures, Research Associate at the London Venture Capital Network, and last but not least, Senior Venture Scout, Level Up Ventures. Again, I'm your host, Christian Marquez, Founder CEO of FinTrap Management. Thank you for joining us for another episode of the Innovators and Investors Podcast. Christian Marquez here. Thank you so much for listening to the Innovators and Investors Podcast. If you're a successful founder or an investor who would like to be on the podcast, please visit podcast.finstratmgmt.com. If you know someone that would be a great guest, please tag them on social media to let them know about the show and include the hashtag Innovators and Investors. I'd love to see your posts and suggestions. We're regularly putting out new episodes and content. To make sure you catch each new episode, please subscribe to the Innovators and Investors Podcast. And your thumbs up, ratings, and reviews go a long way to help promote the show, and it means a lot to me and my team. Would you like to know more? Go to our website, finstratmgmt.com, or follow us on LinkedIn or on X. Our handle is @finstratmgmt. This is Christian Marquez. Thank you for listening. Until next time.